So you've heard me say over and over again, listen really closely to the candidates. And you're going to get a better understanding of who they are, why they are, and where they're going to stand on some very, very important issues that are impacting this city and the greater New Orleans area. And it revealed itself in the sheriff's race, because we had a candidate that really believes that New Orleans is a sanctuary city. Michelle Woodfork, who worked for the NOPD, seems to believe that we are. So the question really is, why is that? Why is it that one who's running for an independent elected office believes that we're a sanctuary city and believes that they are bound by that designation, whether or not it's true or not? Well, it doesn't take much research to figure this all out as to whether or not you are bound by any of this. And the reality is you're not. And then to add insult to injury, they passed a state law here recently that said you can't be. But this is the real irony. As an independent elected sheriff, you choose what you want to involve yourself in. To give you an example, you could be a 287G program sheriff's office. And you can operate under three different models that are offered by the Department of Homeland Security, or U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, excuse me. And these models are the jail enforcement model, the warrant service officer model, and the task force model. The one that makes the most sense for the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office is the jail enforcement model. And that simply is that you can you go through the training and your officers can interrogate individuals about their, go figure, immigration status if they've been arrested. And you can facilitate in placing immigration detainers. It doesn't mean that you actually have to detain them, but you can cooperate with immigration by letting them know that you have an individual who's been arrested, and they can then account for that individual. That individual will be fingerprinted. They can collect those fingerprints so that they know who this individual is in the future, because they may or may not have even known this individual was in the country, right? Is there anything wrong with that? Why would we not want to do that? Some of these same candidates went on to say that, you know, their obligation was only if they had committed a violent crime. Well, what obligation? They don't really define that. Now, there are some restrictions placed upon this office because of the federal consent decree. Makes sense. You're in jail, overcrowded conditions. You don't want to be holding individuals that have not a lot of serious crime in their history. But you do want to let immigration know who they are, why they are, and maybe they have an interest in holding them. Considering the following, a violent crime does not include DWI. What if you are struck by an individual who, illegal, has no insurance, you suffer severe bodily injuries, right? You can't even figure out who this individual is or otherwise. We have our hands around them. If you're not able to recover and you're going to bear the complete and total cost of this, I don't know about you, but I would at least like the individual to get deported, right? But during the course of this presentation, it's interesting what candidates are saying, that we should be treating these individuals with dignity and respect. So I always like to go to Webster to start this conversation off. What is dignity? It's the state of the quality of being worthy of honor and respect. So when they cross the border illegally, were they exercising dignity for the United States? Respect is a due regard for the feelings, the wishes, the rights, or traditions of others. Do they respect us? They know they're violating the law. They know they're coming across illegally. They may be coming across for good reason, but still, they don't respect our traditions, our norms, our customs, and more importantly, our laws. So how do we treat them in an undignified or a non-dignified way by simply cooperating with federal law enforcement? I've not been able to find anyone who's willing to address that. Where's the lack of dignity? If you violated the law to begin this process, you've now entered a jail, you've been arrested for something else, another violation against the customs, the norms of our society that make up the very basis for our laws. How is it that we're treating you in an undignified way by cooperating with ICE? The same holds true with respect. How are we treating you or disrespectful to you by simply doing what we take an oath of office to do? To enforce the Constitution and laws of the United States, to enforce the Constitution and laws of this state, and to adhere to the ordinances of this municipal jurisdiction. That's an oath that we take. So how did we get to this part of this imbalance where we elect you to do a job, but yet we will allow you to impose your ideology on the masses? That's why it's important to pay close attention to what they are saying. They're misleading you because they can participate in all kinds of different ways to cooperate with the federal government. They choose not to. They try to confuse you about what they are bound to or what they are not bound to. I don't know about you. Whatever ICE ends up doing with the individual, I really want law enforcement to gain their identity, get their fingerprints, and forward the information over to ICE and let the chips fall where they may. Because we don't really know what this individual may or may not have done in other areas of the country. They're very transient. We've seen that over and over again. We've seen Democrats put up poster child immigrants, illegal immigrants, up there only days later to find out the individual has a rap sheet about 3 miles long, has been deported 3 times, has come back, which is now a felony. And we're still talking about the dignity and respect that we owe to this individual, but this individual owes you, me, the masses in this country, the citizens of this country, no dignity and no respect. It's interesting. What's also interesting, as you've heard me say this before, is that we do not stand up the same way for other arrested individuals who are in fact citizens of this country. I mean, it's absolutely disingenuous and mind-numbing to me that we continue to go down this path. It's all right if we arrest every citizen in the country, and it's okay if we separate their families, but illegals, not so much. Can't do that. Disrespectful. Lacks dignity. This is nuts. Pay close attention to what they're saying. Now, it may be understandable to understand, you know, about this confusion about whether or not, you know, we are bound by some kind of, you know, sanctuary city mandate or otherwise. I don't know. Because we're always trying really hard to do things to work around the traditions and the norms and the laws of the city, the state, and this country. So, you know, top priority item for the city of New Orleans, I brought this up the other day, was a municipal ID. Where did this notion come from? What in the hell is this about? Why would we create another ID that doesn't require the highest level of verification in supporting documentation to create more confusion? We have a jail right now that can't seem to identify much of anybody in the jail and can't figure out who's in, who's out, and who they are. So we will create another level of an ID in this city, and it's interesting. And this may be what's leading to the confusion, right? Is that almost every city that has a municipal ID is, guess what? A sanctuary city. Go figure. And in almost every case, immigration status does not matter. Cities like Chicago, New York, Oakland, Los Angeles, Austin, Baltimore, Detroit, Milwaukee, Newark, San Francisco. I know that's on your top 10 list of cities to emulate, right? That's where we want to be. The common theme through all of these cities is most of them are broke. Most of them are a social mess, and most of them have more problems than they know what to deal with, and they've been wishy-washy on social services for the illegal population. And if you don't rise to the level of what they think is dignity and what they think is respect, you are a bad person. Why would we want to emulate these cities? Why would we not want to walk to the beat of our own drum? The other thing they all have in common is they're Democrat-led. No big surprise there either, right? So here we are with our ID, and there's about 21 different ways to prove who you are to get this ID. It can be like any organization or association that, you know, would have a picture, your name, and your date of birth, your age, right? So is it hard for anyone out there to imagine that we're going to have some NGO, nonprofit organization that's going to be out there that all of a sudden they're going to be starting to issue library cards and things of that nature and some form of an ID to be able to support getting a municipal ID without ever providing a birth certificate, a driver's license, or a passport? Right? Why? Because this is set up intentionally to confuse people and circumvent the laws of the state of Louisiana in this country. I mean, call it for what it is. I mean, the other thing that's very interesting about all of this as well is that in the description of every single one of these cities, one of the driving forces is inclusion. Right? And in fact, in this city, Natalie Rupp, the executive director of the Trans Income Project, said the IDs are a win for the LGBTQ plus people, as cardholders will have the option of including a self-designating gender marker that is not dependent on the gender marked on their birth certificate. So we know we're actually not going to do that. In fact, we are going to ignore, even if they provided the birth certificate, as it relates to gender. So RUP's organization worked with the city to establish three gender markers. They include M for males, F for females, and X for anyone who does not identify as a male or female. So they can make up something that they identify as. That could be if you're non-binary, gender non-conforming, gender fluid, gender expansive, in any way, she says. So this allows people to more accurately reflect themselves on their ID. So what is the purpose? Is this just a feel-good measure that all of these cities are actually engaging in to promote this inclusivity that they're talking about, to be able to have a government authentic recognition of who you want people to believe that you are, even if you're not that? And this becomes a priority for city government, who has exhibited failure after failure after failure after failure, and at the very least has proven that you can't walk and chew gum at the same time. And this becomes a priority. This becomes the priority to circumvent that there are two genders. We no longer follow the science, right? We only follow the science when the science embraces our ideology. Any other time, no sense in following the science. It's not of any value. It's not of any worth. Well, I would tell you, I don't see where this ID is of any value or of any worth at all, period. All this is an overt way of saying we are going to circumvent state law. We are going to circumvent what the majority of the population believes, because our ideology is our ideology, and we will go to whatever extent, we will waste whatever tax dollars to promote this ideology. Plain and simple. So, where will this be? One of the things they said here, and you should consider this and ask questions of these sheriff's candidates, that they will be allowed to use these IDs for law enforcement purposes. I certainly hope that when they go to, like, AFIS, the Automated Fingerprint Identification System, or whatever they're calling it now, and you have no prints on record, that they're not entering information off of this ID. Because if they do, they will completely bastardize the criminal histories database across this country in a very short period of time. Really short period of time. And there are many of us that believe that is not by accident. We'll be right back. Stay with us.